White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. Your host for today's show is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. So get a spot of tea, sit down and relax, because it's time for another show on the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network.
Well, good day, all you lone wolves out there. Here's Terrible Tommy in the bunker right here in north central Indiana. It's cooled off. It's down in the 30s now. Wow. And we had some snow yesterday. Didn't stay on the ground, though. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And that's where you send your donations for the radio show or anything else you want to donate for. And send it there, and we'll get it. And we'll put it to good use, not like some of these other people out there. I'm going to first play you some information I've got on you guys that like to go looking for treasure. Well, I'm going to show you where the treasure's at, and you can just think about what you might want to do.
Ten most guarded locations. Number 10. The Church of Scientology Vault. Scientology is a mystery unto itself, but it gets even stranger with their underground vault, which is found in a cave in the New Mexico desert. Inside the cave, which is built to withstand a hydrogen bomb, there are titanium caskets containing steel plates, and gold discs inscribed with fundamental Scientology teachings. All of this is shielded by three 2,267-kilogram, that's 5,000-pound, stainless steel doors. Only if you're a top dog in the Scientology world can you catch a glimpse of the vault, which is defended by gates, armed guards, and security cameras. Number 9. The Pionen Bunker. The Pionen Bunker is owned by Swedish internet service provider Bahnhof. The servers are safeguarded in a nuclear bunker, which has been built into White Mountain in Stockholm. The bunker's entrance is protected by a 40-centimeter thick door that is only accessible by a tunnel 30 meters underground. Number 8. The Vatican Secret Archives. The Vatican Secret Archives in the Vatican City has many theories surrounding it, but very little evidence as to what it actually holds. The archives are defended 24 hours a day by the Pontifical Swiss Guard, and are said to have storerooms with over 80 kilometers or 50 miles of shelves, lined with documents dating back to the 8th century. Despite the Church's attempts at openness, critics say the contents aren't easily accessible. The archives are rumored to contain gospels that contradict the Bible, the earliest known collection of pornography, and plans to control the world. The Pope currently owns the archives, with ownership passing to his successor after death or resignation. Number 7. The KFC Vault. Nothing on this list is more valuable than the KFC secret recipe, which is held in Kentucky, Louisville, and consists of 11 undisclosed herbs and spices. In 2009, the vault was upgraded, and during the 5 months of construction, the recipe was kept in an undisclosed location. It was transported via a lockbox, handcuffed to the wrist of a security consultant. Now the recipe is surrounded by motion detectors, cameras, and 24-hour guards. Thick concrete slabs surround the safe, and the entire security system is connected to a backup generator. Number 6. The Antwerp Diamond Center Vault. The Antwerp Diamond Vault in Belgium is best known as the world's most impenetrable diamond safe. It houses around 70% of the world's diamonds. As a result, it is fitted with heat detectors, magnetic fields, a lock with over 100 million possible combinations, and Doppler radar, which can detect drops of precipitation. The door itself is 3 tons of solid steel. But despite all this, in 2003, Italian thieves broke in, shut down all the security measures, and stole $100 million worth of diamonds, setting off no alarms as they went. Number 5. The Seed Vault. The compound is located in Svalbard, a large barren rock island in the Arctic Circle. The Seed Vault holds 865,000 different samples of seeds.
This is the most important bank, the most important vault in the world.
It's a kind of a frozen Garden of Eden.
This is in an effort to preserve crop diversity and assure humans that we will have a source of food no matter what man-made or natural disasters occur in the future. As if the isolated landscape wasn't good enough, it is defended by blast-proof doors, motion sensors, airlocks, and surrounded by steel-reinforced concrete. Number 4. The U.S. Bullion Depository. The U.S. Bullion Depository in Fort Knox is owned by the U.S. Mint and stores thousands of tons of gold as well as historical documents. The depository is surrounded by a 1.2 meter thick solid granite wall, as well as squadrons of machine gun wielding guards and armed military. There is also a 22-ton vault blast door, which is secured by a lock that requires a 10-person team to unlock. The depository is said to be able to withstand a direct hit from an atomic bomb. Number 3. ADX Supermax Prison. ADX Supermax Prison for Men in Colorado, USA, is home to some of the world's worst criminals. From the infamous shoe bomber Richard Reed to 9/11 terrorist mastermind Zacharias Mousaoui. Unsurprisingly, the prison was designed to be escape-proof. Attack dogs guard the area between the prison walls and a 3.6 meter high razor wire fence. Motion-detecting laser beams, pressure pads, and cameras fill the site. Even if an inmate tried to escape, a guard would spot them on the 24-hour monitors and activate a panic button that instantly closes every door in the facility. Number 2. Area 51. Shrouded in secrecy, Area 51 in Nevada is also one of the most heavily guarded military sites in the US. The apparent purpose of Area 51 is an airbase, but many believe it to be a military base hiding secrets of extraterrestrial activity. The airspace above Area 51 is restricted to all commercial and military flights, and armed men and vehicles regularly circle the perimeter of the base for added protection. In 2012, a BBC film crew was held at gunpoint for 3 hours after trespassing on the site. When spoken to after the event, one guard said, "We could make you disappear and your body will never be found. If any of you had kept going, we would have shot you." Number 1. The Federal Reserve Bank in New York. The Federal Reserve Bank is the central banking system of the US. Its vault sits 24 meters below the streets of Manhattan and is home to the world's biggest stockpile of gold, valued at $203.3 billion. The vault is safeguarded by a multi-layered steel security system, with a 90-ton cylinder door protecting the only entry into the vault. It is further secured by steel-reinforced concrete walls, and activity inside the vault is monitored 24 hours a day.
How about those Italians? $100 million in diamonds, how about that? Question, how are you and your colored TV getting along? Do you notice all the corporations in the last year have switch to total recruitment of black people for advertising, and also almost all the advertisings are mixed race, black and white? You notice that? So why are you going to go out this Christmas and buy a whole bunch of Chinese made items when these are the people who are doing everything they can to destroy your race, these corporations? So my advice to you would be buy something that is totally manufactured in this country, number one. Number two, try to buy used or reconditioned things. and above all, cut down on this Christmas spending. Because when you put money in the pockets of these big corporations, and they're going to put money in the pocket of the Chinese and other people, you're working against your own interests. Remember that. And these corporations have become the biggest promoters of race mixing in the whole society. Same for movies. They're putting more and more of these thoroughly race mixed movies out. Don't go to those movies. There's all kinds of movies on. In fact, don't go to theater at all. You can go to Netflix and Roku and Hulu and all of that stuff and get plenty of movies. Foreign movies, too. You got to get them in the pocketbook. That's the way you got to get them, or one way at least. I hear that the Trump group are talking about pouring $1 trillion into the infrastructure of the country. Well, that'll be great. I can go along with that. But where are you going to get the $1 trillion from? Well, one thing you're going to have to do is slack off on this military stuff. Now, Trump can't talk out of both sides of his mouth here, or maybe he can about that, because it sounds like they're going to want to beef up the military and spend more money on the military, which means you won't have the money for the infrastructure. So tell me how that works. And this new CIA head, he's one of the most radical, rabid guys around. He's all for torture. Under the Bush administration or regime? Yeah, he loves torture. And they do it in Guantanamo, or they can do it in your hometown if they decide to. So that's beginning to give me an idea of what this administration is going to look like. Isn't it interesting how these guys can call themselves sons of bitches in the primary and call each other every name in the book and then sit down and we're buddies again? That's crazy. I mean, they don't even take any time to get over it right now. Oh yeah, I'm with you now. You really want to follow leaders like that you can call them every name in the book and they come back and kiss your ass? Well, that's the kind of leaders we've got. I imagine Putin sitting over there in his office in the Kremlin shaking his head, laughing his ass off at the kind of people we have leading this country. Yeah. At least back in the old days, they used to beat the shit out of each other with canes and whatever they could get their hands on. In some of these other countries, they have out-and-out riots in their Congress. Not the United States. We're all together working for each other, love each other, and all that bullshit. Yeah. Well, we're going to go back to 1971 today, boys and girls, and visit a publication that's out of business now, the American Mercury, which had been around for 40 years. And I knew the publishers in Los Angeles, which was part of the Willis Carto empire. And they used to sell all kinds of good books. I used to go in there all the time. And, of course, that was later to become the Institute for Hysterical Review. I say Hysterical Review as is funny, some of the things that happened. And I was privy to a lot of things that happened there in the beginning of the Institute for Hysterical Review. And I was there when they burned down their warehouse, the JDL. Which nobody ever got charged with that arson crime on the IHR warehouse. But before that, it was the American Mercury. And today I'm going to give you an article called The Nameless Tyrant. Without a doubt, one of the greatest minds of the 20th century was Francis Parker Yockey, the towering genius whose most notable achievement was Imperium, the book. Now, that Imperium was about 500 pages, boys and girls. I remember it back when I got a copy, and I read it. I was laying on the beach over in Santa Catalina out there off California. I and my family had gone over there. And so I finished reading Imperium there on the beach. Not as well known as Imperium are a number of shorter essays, four of which have recently been reprinted by the Nordland Press back in New Jersey. Yockey had virtually a superhuman ability to see years into the future, and this, as he himself remarked, is the mark of a genius. In 1948, for example, he clearly understood an esoteric fact which was probably realized then by no one else except the actors themselves, and today, 23 years later, is still comprehended by only a handful. Yet it is vitally important and must be recognized before today can be understood in the light of reality. The fact to which we refer to is that the American nation is not sovereign, but is literally a Zionist dependency. Acceptance of this fact throws much light on the true world political picture and makes understandable things which are otherwise mysterious. It means, in its most elemental, that there are three superpowers in the world today: Red China, the Soviet Union, and International Zionism. Excuse me. It means that the American people literally have less influence on their government than do the people of China or Russia on theirs. You may deplore this as much as you wish, but point to facts which refute it. You will find it hard to find such facts. Those who refuse to accept that the American government is by its inner nature alien and hostile to the majority of Americans are mere sentimentalists who cling to the myth of a bygone era. They are certainly not realists, nor are they even honest with themselves. The majority blames the name and names these consistent and predictable treason to their welfare as bureaucracy, or creeping socialism, or infiltration, or bad advice given to the frauds they elect to office. In reality, it is none of these things. The reason that the Washington regime always reacts to the detriment of the majority is very simple. It is because the government is not of the people, nor is it by the people, nor for the people. It is totally alien and a foreign thing, an arm of international communism dictated to advancing the interests of those who control it. The word was not communism, it was commu-Zionism. There is an easy way to determine whether or not a nation is sovereign and the people free. The people of a sovereign nation must control their foreign policy, and free people must live without fear of their government. In the United States, neither of these conditions prevail. The American people no more control their foreign policy than did the Franks under the Roman Empire, the Egyptians under the British Empire, or than the Poles do today under the Soviet Empire. At any rate, the domestic policy of a nation must be shaped to conform to foreign policy. This is why a conqueror must take control of the nation's got a problem, boys and girls. foreign policy if he expects to control the nation in question. Is America, therefore, an independent and vassal or a vassal state? Before answering this question, please cite just one decision that the State Department has made since 1930 which has not served the interests of an alien and harmed the people of the United States. To wit, Tommy submits to you that the State Department is probably the most dangerous department in the country for the race. Absolutely, the State Department, remember that. In one of the four essays cited previously, The World in Flames, Yaki analyzed this fact. Remember as you read it that these words were written in the late 59, before the no-win Vietnam fiasco. Quote, Russian successes, except for its German-made rockets, are all a gift of the Washington regime. But the power gifts which the Washington regime has made to Russia are not explicable entirely by simple stupidity, simple incapacity. There is further factor at work that Zionist Washington regime is on both sides of most power questions in the world. Its sole firm stand is its fundamental anti-German position. Germany must be destroyed. Its young men must be slaughtered in Algeria. Washington is on both sides. It is the French government as its ally. It is the rebels by virtue of the world program of freedom for everybody. In Egypt, the Washington regime told Palestine, England, and France to attack. And when the rush arose, it told them to stop. It was within a week the anti-Nasser and pro-Nasser. It occupied Lebanon, then evacuated. It held back Chang when, from his island, he would have attacked China, with whom the Washington regime was then at war. It defended the South Korea, but helped the Chinese maintain their supply line to the front. During the Chinese War of Korea, in Korea, it made war the negotiated peace at the same time for years. In Cuba, it forbade exportation of arms to the loyal Batista and thus helped Fidel Castro. Now it is committed to the overthrow of Castro. It is a psychological riddle, decipherable only thus. The Zionists have two minds which function independently. As Zionists, they are committed to the destruction of Western civilization, and in this they sympathize with Russia and China, with Japan, with the Arabs, and as much as they anathematize Germany, which is the mind and heart of Western civilization. As custodians of the United States, they must half-heartedly remain at least the technical and political domination of civilization, even while destroying its soul and its meaning. In a word, they are working simultaneously for and against Western civilization. Quite obviously, they are thus doing more damage than conferring benefit. If a commander of a fortress sympathizes with the enemy, but yet insists on defending the fortress rather than surrendering it, he has surely found the highest formula of destruction. Unquote. Do the people live in America free of terror of their government? Only a fool would say they do. Americans are increasingly terrified of their government, which cannot enforce law and order in the streets, but which can swoop down and destroy a patriot like A.J. Porth, who contests the regressive fraud known as the income tax. I met A.J. Porth. He was a fine man. He was in his 80s when I met him. That comment is from me. Mm-hmm. But the developing police state in America is really superficial. For a government like ours only formalizes and legalizes and depredations of the criminals who control it. What Americans really fear today is to name these criminals. only may criticize any race or group in the United States except one. For if it's that one chosen race, it is criticized, retribution is certain and swift. You don't say bad things about the Jews. In any dictatorship, it is the same. The tyrant cannot be criticized, and he controls the press. Applying this historical truism to America, who rules? To put it another way, what one entity cannot be criticized without risk of smear, financial ruin, ridicule, and social ostracism? The tyrant of America and the nameless terror are one and the same, and America is theirs. And that's the end of that particular comment. Well, here's a new thing to talk about. Do you recognize the right wing and how they're doing everything they can to claim they're not racist? Every right wing pundit, everyone on the radio talk show that's right wing, is screaming, "Oh no, we're not racist. We're just talking about economics and education and warfare and things like that." Well, I got to thinking about my position that I held in the beginning of the campaign. I got to figuring out it is racism. When the left say it's racism and cry about it, it is racism. And that's what happened. It just happened to be that Trump triggered it. So I think to learn what's really going on, you got to listen to the left scream and yell and cry and moan, because that's really what is going on. Because Jack London said, you know, with genetic memory, that our race, even though it's not doing a very good job right now, or hasn't been doing a very good job of surviving, the racism is in their bones. The genetics are there, and they're not going to go away. They lay there sort of dormant, but then they gradually fire up again. So what we had in this primary, in this election, was white people beginning to express their racism without expressing their racism. And the left know it, because they are racist too. They're very racist, and they're trying to hide it under their pants. There are no more racist people in the world than these left wingers. But they're so upset about it and so feel so bad about it that they go to extremes to hide it. And that's why they go after anybody who says anything that they consider maybe racist on the right, is because they recognize what they are, but they hide it in all kinds of ways. So what we saw here, I'm saying, was a good thing, and it's continuing to be a good thing, because we don't really have to do a hell of a lot about it, because the people on the left, the Jewish left, or any left, they're screaming their heads off about the racism, and they're correct, while the right wing is covering for the racism by saying, "Oh no, we're not racist. You know, this is bad." Like I said the other day, that they, like the Klansmen, they get on TV standing there in a robe asking if they were white supremacists or racist, and the guy would say, "No, no, we're just for America. We're not racist." Well, then I finally figured out this last election was a great deal, and I missed it. I was very negative about it. But this is great, because the reverberation coming from the Clinton camp is telling the truth about race, that much of the white working class are racist, but they won't admit to it. They'll use every other excuse, and it's going to get worse. So rather than listen to the right-wing pundits on the radio who are lying, they're trying to cover up. They know it is a resurgence of white racism. They're trying to cover up for it by going railing on and on and on about how bad the left wing is because they call it the right wing racist, of which they are. And they'll deny it, deny it, deny it. I mean, millions of white Americans deny they're racist. But by their very actions and by their very actions, they are racist. They're not out in the street killing black people and all that kind of stuff. But there's many ways to be a white racist. And so if you want to find out how racist the white race is, you go to the left. They're telling you. And it's the right wing leaders who deny it. And so think about that. And if you look at it that way, then we had a tremendous victory. Because no matter how much they, a racist can't get on the radio or TV. I mean, you can't do it. So why wouldn't they let a racist on? Well, there's the right wing. It's the right wing that's afraid of racism because they're not one of us. And they talk about, because most of them are in it for the money that they can get out of it. You know, the Rush. I will say Rush Limbaugh, a couple of times I've heard him, they're sort of on the edge of talking racism. I see as the white working class gets a little bit more overtly so-called racist, then these right-wing pundits become a little bit more white racist. to where Rush Scumball, he's different than he was 5 years ago. So remember that. It's not the right wing that's your friend. You know, they'll talk about your jobs and all that kind of stuff. But racially, they're not your friends. The left wing, Jewish left wing, are your friends because they're saying what you are. And they're calling you out and they're saying you're a bunch of racists, which you are. But they realize you're hiding it all the time. If you're looking for an overt act where somebody come out and bury a hatchet in a Negro's head, that's not happening. But we're gradually growing in ideological strength through the memory that, wait a minute, I lost my point. Genetic memory that Jack London talked about and in his Star Rover and other books. And he's right. They're not going to get rid of racism because it's in the genes. We evolved into racism, tribalism, and so forth. And so when you hear the left screaming their asses off and marching in the streets, that's good because they recognize the fact that we are racist as hell. But we're trying to hide it. Millions of white people, working class, trying to hide it. But each year it gets even more powerful if you watch what's going on. So anyhow, I hope I made that somewhat clear to you. If not, ask me a question and I'll tell you about it all over again. Just remember, the left wing is telling the truth about racism. The right wing's trying to hide it. Well, I've got an interesting email. One of our fellows that took me to the woodshed a while back on this campaign for Trump, to which I've just now given you information that I was wrong in figuring this thing out. He says, "Hey, Tom, not that I am discouraged by you, but I look to you as a legitimate source of news, friend. It was honorable to hear you say that you was wrong about Trump not being elected thing. As to your further comment on saying how much did you win or lose on him, only a paltry $35. Hell, I will give a donation to someone who says he's going to deport 11 million MUDs and build a wall. I had to do it, Tom." The Ruskies and the Chinks were ready to destroy the planet. We averted disaster for now, caused Trump. Unfortunately, I think this will set back the white nationalist thing a lot with him in the driver's seat. But Hillary would have been right in one worlders to set this ball of wax aflame. Well, I agree. In fact, I said someplace on one of my shows, I think maybe we should support Hillary for president because she'll make it a lot worse a lot quicker. And she'll reactivate a whole lot of white racists that don't remember that there should be white racists. And so now this may be a setback for a while till we get another Hillary to come along. I don't know. You never know. I don't know whether she can run again. I guess she could, as long as she hasn't been elected. She could run again. Oh, God. I got a sign out front of my house that says, "Is she gone?" So I get taken to the woodshed once in a while, like everybody else. So that's the way it works, and doesn't bother me a bit, as long as the game keeps going. But our position now should be every time a left winger, whatever you want to call them, is screaming about the white racism, we should say thank you and smile. And not shout them down and say, "No, we're not," you know, like a whole lot of racists were trying to shout down people who are anti-racist. Well, the anti-racists are doing us a good job. That's what I've been saying. So whenever you hear them out there on the street or whatever, say, "Thank you. Thank you. It's wonderful." And they won't know what to think. So just remember, boys and girls, the left wing or whoever it is that's anti-racist, they're actually on our side and don't know it. Well, let's see what the Jews have to say about it. Steve Bannon, president-elect Donald Trump's top advisor, accused by Jewish groups of giving voice to anti-Semites and racists, did not show up at the Zionist Organization of America's gala dinner Sunday night, despite prior announcement he would be among the guests. This is another victory for us, because whatever this guy is, of course, people on his Breitbart thing keep claiming, "Oh, no, he's not a racist, he's not a racist, he's not a racist." And it doesn't make any difference whether he is or not. He's going to be sitting there in the cabinet spreading hysteria. As long as Trump is in office, they're going to be spreading hysteria far and wide. And, of course, that's what I say. That's good. It's true. He is a racist. Just tell everybody, yeah, whether he is or not. He went to the Klan meeting with me the other night. This kind of thing is going to, this is what I call jiu-jitsu, when you two use the strength of your opposition upon himself. I finally figured this thing out. Bannon's expected participation drew interest both from supporters of Trump, who viewed the event as proof that some in organized Jewish community are willing to embrace him despite criticism, and from liberal organizations that they accused the ZOA, Zionist Organization of America, of legitimizing a racist, as if Jews aren't racist. They're racist to the core, but they're not a race. They think they're a race. They call themselves a race. That's what's funny. Hundreds of protesters staged a demonstration outside the event at the Grand Hyatt Hotel in New York, calling on Trump to rescind Bannon's appointment as chief White House strategist and senior advisor. There you see, boys, we got an absolute anti-Semite Nazi in the White House there. say it loud, say it clear. Nazis are not welcome here, unquote. The protesters chanted, some carrying signs accusing Bannon of racism and tying him to white nationalists. Protests were organized by, if not now, and by Jewish Voice for Peace and two left-leaning Jewish groups, which is terrific. Now, all the right-wing radio shows will come back and say, this is preposterous. He's not a racist. None of these people are racist. These are good Americans, good, loyal Christian Americans that just want to try to get people jobs and so forth. The Anti-Defecation League and other organizations made statements opposing Bannon's appointment to Trump's administration. Abe Foxman, former head of the Anti-Defecation League and an esteemed Kike leader, elder, sent out an emailed statement under the auspices of the organization that he would not attend the dinner because it had become politicized. Oh, like the ADL dinners have never been politicized? That's all they are, is politicized. What an asshole. Klein said that Foxman asked to come and that he did so after Bannon's invitation had been announced. Oh, man, this is getting better all the time, boys and girls. I've got a new lease on life. Let's see here. Foxman shuns the Zionist gala over this rotten, Steve, anti-Semite, Jew-hating Bannon. Oh, I'm not either. I'm not your anti-Jew. I'm not. I'm, in fact, my best friends are Jews. Oh, yeah, we know. We know. Come on. Metzger knows you're an anti-Jew. He put out the word on you. The Zionist Organization of America had announced early last week that Bannon would be among its guests at the gala dinner honoring top Jewish Republican donor Bernie Marcus. Republican Congressman Ed Royce, Israel's ambassador to the UN, Danny Dannon, and Professor Alan Dershowitz. That boy, there's a real asshole, Alan Dershowitz. He's a Jewish Nazi. ZOA's president, Morton Klein, an outspoken defender of Bannon, said at the time that Bannon's participation would be an act of gratitude for the backing he received from Zionist Organization of America. On Sunday night, after it became clear that Bannon was a no-show, that's too bad, Klein told Jewish Insider that it was Bannon who had called him up asking to participate, and that his absence didn't mean a lack of support. Not everyone needs to be here. I can see what Bannon's doing. This is part of the plan. He's playing this thing. I see exactly how he's playing it by wanting to go to Israel and visit the wall and all of that stuff. He's putting a stick in their eye. He knows they don't want him to come, and they knew he didn't want to be at this meeting, really. But he knew how they would react by wanting to come. I'm beginning to see just exactly how Bannon and these people are thinking, and that gives me hope. Here's headlines in the Jewish papers. Bannon denies being anti-Jew. Steve Bannon, in his first interview since Donald Trump named him chief strategist at the White House, denied being an anti-Jew or a white supremacist. Bannon served as chairman of the Breitbart News before joining the Trump campaign as its CEO. Bannon has called Breitbart a platform of the alt-right, a loose movement of the far right whose followers traffic variously in white nationalism, anti-immigration sentiment, anti-Semitism and a disdain for political correctness. Quote, Breitbart is the most pro-Israel site in the United States of America, unquote, Bannon told the Wall Street Journal in an interview posted Friday. Well, you see, it don't make any difference whether it is or not. They're not going to get out of being called anti-Jewish, which serves our purposes well. We don't need to know exactly what Breitbart's thinking, but when he's doing something that feeds right into our ideas, well, whether he likes it or not, he's one of us. I have Breitbart Jerusalem, which I have Aaron Klein run with about 10 reporters there. We've been leaders in stopping the BDS movement in the United States. We're a leader in the reporting of young Jewish students being harassed on American campuses. We've been a leader on reporting on the terrible plight of the Jews in Europe. But Bannon, don't make any difference, you're still an anti-Semite, and the left wing know it. Admit it. In the same interview, Bannon praised the alt-right movement and said that he believes the less savory elements of the movement will one day fall away. Quote, our definition of the alt-right is younger people who are anti-globalist, very nationalist, terribly anti-establishment, he said. That's the tone the right wing takes, because they think they have to deny they're racist, they have to deny they're anti-Jew, they have to deny they're anti-Islam and all that kind of stuff. But the more they do it, the more the left-wing Soros people go crazy and attack him and march in the street and shoot cops and everything else. I tell you, boys, worse can be better, and it's looking better all the time. He asserted that Breitbart represents more than just the alt-right. We provide an outlet for 10 to, or 12 or 15 lines of thought, Bannon said. We set it up that way. He denied charges of white supremacism. I'm an economic nationalist. Well, he's probably telling the truth. But I don't care. If my friends on the left say he's a white supremacist, then he's a white supremacist. They don't lie. I'm an American first guy, whatever that means. What the hell does that mean? How about I'm a white American white guy first? And I have admired nationalist movements throughout the world. Well, some of them are pretty shitty. Have said repeatedly, strong nations make great neighbors. That's like waving a stick in front of the right or the left wing. Fascism. I also said repeatedly that the ethno-nationalist movement prominent in Europe will change over time. I've never been a supporter of ethno-nationalism. What he's saying is racial nationalism. He uses ethno as sort of a cover because it is racial and is tribal and it is good. America First was a World War II era isolationist movement that decried mounting calls for America's involvement in the war as Jewish manipulation, which part of it was. And isolation is a good thing when it comes to war. You don't need to be isolated when it comes to trade and things like that, unless it damages your race, and then you got to get rid of it. Bannon told Hollywood Reporter in an interview posted Friday that he is not a white nationalist like David Duke. I'm a nationalist. I'm an economic nationalist. You can yap all that stuff you want, but my friends on the left know about you. You are a goddamn white supremacist, Jew-hating bastard. And you're never going to get away from it. And also, it gives the veneer to the Trump administration they're not going to get away from. And they'll probably dump Bannon out about maybe a year, maybe a few months. However, he was really the man behind the victory for Trump, so he may not be the kind of guy to mess with. He said the new Trump administration is going to build an entirely new political movement. It's everything related to jobs. Everything's not related to jobs. There's some things more important than jobs. The conservatives are going to go crazy. He said the liberals in the media are blind to who we are and what we're doing. No, they're not. They know you're a goddamn racist. You're not going to escape it. You're an anti-Semite racist. Tom Metzger and the left wing say you are. Bannon, according to Hollywood Reporter writer Michael Wolff, is the man with the idea. If Trumpism is to represent something intellectually and historically coherent, it's Bannon's job to make it so. In this, he could not be less assured or more confusing figure for the liberals. Fiercely intelligent and yet reflexively drawn to the inverse of every liberal assumption and shibboleth. Oh, this is great. I hope you're getting this like I'm getting it. It's a funny deal. Celebrate, boys and girls. We're still moving in the right direction. For many years now, American Jews have been told to worry about anti-Jewism from the left, from those criticism of Israel veers into rank delegitimization of the Jewish state. Well-funded efforts have sprung up to defeat this new anti-Jewism, especially on college campuses, and it's getting to the point where support of the movement to boycott, sanction, and divest from Israel is equated with betrayal of the Jewish people. So obsessed are we with looking for threats from one direction that we have missed the growing danger from another. White Aryan resistance. Unleashed by Donald Trump's presidential campaign and cemented by the appointment of Stephen Bannon to a powerful position in the White House, the anti-Jew sentiments of the far right are closer to the center of political power than they've been in recent memory. Run to the hills. It's all over. The left are panicking. They're sitting on their doorsteps crying. This new anti-Jewism is largely limited to social media onslaughts and is nowhere near as pervasive as the global efforts to isolate Israel and Israel's for now, but ignoring it, dismissing it, excusing it, hoping it will go away, as some Jewish leaders are doing, is not only perilous, it's hypocritical and self-defeating. Unless we Jews denounce and work against the hatred from the right with the same energy and resources using to combat hatred from the left, we risk losing allies and diminishing our own moral standing. Quote, we now know that there is a coherent threat from the right as well as the left on us poor Jews. Yehuda Kurtzer, president of the Shalom Hartman Institute of North America and a wise observer of the American Jewish scene, told me, quote, I don't know why there isn't a coherent response to the right. Well, I think it's heating up. When I spoke to him and others about this development late last week, everyone was waiting to see what role, if any, Bannon might play in a Trump administration before sounding the alarm bell. Now we know chief strategist and senior counsel to the president. Run for your lives, Jews. Run for your lives. Quote, we need to do serious reckoning, said Deborah Lipstadt, who's writing a book about anti-Jewism and as a preeminent historian of the Holocaust denial, knows of what she speaks. Quote, it's been so convenient for people to beat up on the left, but you can't ignore what's coming from the right. Bannon is both a poster child for this development and the reason it will be complicated reckoning. Some of the Jews who have worked with him at Breitbart News, what do you mean? He got Jews working for him? I thought he was an anti-Semite. Are lining up to vouch for his tolerant character. Quote, I have Saturdays off, Jewish holidays off, and Steve Bannon always wishes me a Shabbat Shalom on Friday afternoon, just in case you were concerned about that, unquote. Joel Pollack, Breitbart's senior editor-at-large, told NPR. Well, I'm sure that during the occupation of France and so forth and some of these other countries that the Nazis, some of the Nazi officers would leave people that were citizens of that country off to have a day off for a picnic or something. They weren't chained to their desks or anything like that. So there's a lot of difference between Jews, too. Even more as Israel politics are hawkish enough to make Morton Klein, a very hawkish head of the Zionist Organization of America, boast that Bannon will attend the ZOA's annual awards gala on Sunday, which he did not do. Bannon may be, as Klein insisted, the opposite of anti-Semite, but the news organization he oversaw until joining the Trump campaign unabashedly embraced the white supremacist movement that is anti-immigrant, anti-feminist, and anti-Muslim, and at times anti-Semitic. Oh, yeah, that's right, man. That's why I agree with my left-wing brothers. They're right. That's what they say, and that's got to be true. Hillary's got to be telling the truth, too, but it's too late for her. Quote, we're the platform for the alt-right, unquote, Bannon proudly told Mother Jones last summer. Oh, that's about it for today, boys and girls, but this has got my funny bone going of how this is being twisted around and how it's working good, you know, and it's calling out the right-wing conservative know-nothings. They're denying racism, and they can't deny it because even if they do deny it, if the left-wing says you're a anti-Semite, you're an anti-Semite. If the left-wing say you're a racist. Don't you understand that, boys and girls? Be back with you tomorrow, Thursday. Have a good day, and oh, it's wonderful. Wonderful.
White people see things that other minorities don't see. White folks see all kind of shit. UFOs. Monsters. The Loch Ness Monster. Bottomless Snowman. Bigfoot. Square Toe. Little Pussy. You see all kind of shit. I want one nigga to see one monster and be on the 6 o'clock news. I saw it. I saw the monster. I saw the cornbread monster. He had great big old black IPI. Greens and shit hanging out his back. Let us see some shit just once. And don't mention UFOs. You guys, white people are shaking their heads. You know that's a damn truth, too. You guys see UFOs in your goddamn sleep. And you know everybody relates to you because white folks always talking that shit. You're so goddamn dramatic with the shit. Because you'll cry, drop up a hat. You have to believe. You have to believe that. We were vacationing. We were in the desert. We saw something hovering. We saw bright lights. We heard noises. Shh. Now, when niggas see this shit, you cross-examine them. You have to believe it was we were in the desert.
What were you niggas doing in the desert?
We're vacationing.
Vacationing? You don't have jobs. How could you be vacationing?
We saw something hovering.
It's those big, wide nigga hats you wear.
We saw bright lights.
Highway Patrol, get these niggas out of my office.
Bring in some more truthful white people. The USOs took us. They fucked us. They took us. They fucked us. See, let some nigga aliens pick up white folks. They won't even talk about it. Well, you were missing for 2 days. I don't want to talk about it. Let's have that on the cover of the Inquirer. Nigga aliens take white family away for 2 weeks. They brought them back beat up. Anyway, look. They took us. They beat us. All those niggers beat